Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vonta comes in. Vonta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vonta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vonta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vonta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My next guest is Jan Lozek, the founder and managing partner of Future Energy Ventures. Future Energy Ventures is a unique venture capital and collaboration platform that brings together corporate partners and world-class startups to shape the future energy landscape. Everyone, give it up for Jan. Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Marcin, for having me, and thanks for the nice introduction. So really looking forward to our conversation. So we've set up Future Energy Ventures 9 years ago in 2016 to help to embrace this decarbonization of our countries and the planet ultimately. And I'm so happy to be here.
Amazing. Thanks for this little intro to energy, Future Energy Ventures already. I'm super excited to have you on the show and looking forward to our conversations as well. You've been in climate tech for years now. What's the most exciting shift you've seen in how investors approach the energy transition?
I think the most exciting shift is that we have now available a lot of technologies which can be implemented and which make profits. If you think about a wind farm or a solar panel or a heat pump or an electrical vehicle, these are all assets we can use, which are fully renewable and non-polluting, and which makes a lot of economic sense to all of us. When I've started to think about climate, it was in fact a couple of years ago when I was 18, and we had forests dying in the middle of Europe, and we were really worrying about the future and about sustainability. Wind miles and solar farms, they were really, really expensive, and it did not make any sense to put them into place, into operation. But today, that's the cheapest form of generating energy, so it makes a lot of sense for all of us. And I'm so excited about this. And with that, we have a lot of options to get to decarbonizing our planet much faster than we think. We have everything at hand to decarbonize at least 2/3 of our planet with the technology we have right now. And that's really excites me, and that's my investor focus, so to say. And then there's a lot of developments with regard to deep technologies we also need then a little bit later to get to net zero. So I'm excited, and I feel like we can make it. It's just on us.
Yeah, and in order to make it, we need bold ideas coming from amazing founders, unstoppable founders. Speaking of them, what's the biggest misconception founders have about scaling in the energy sector?
Yeah, I think that's part of the game. No, if you wanted to set up something really, really new, you need to be a great visionary, and you need to have the hope that everything will work out how you think it's true in the very beginning. And you usually start with a concept and with some ideas, and then you start to scale it. And I think the reality in the very end, it never works out when you think it's true in the very beginning. And over time, you will change your business model and your operation and your positioning and your products several times. But maybe the misperception is what you think through in the very end, you never will achieve. It will be totally different. However, the real perception is yes, we can make impossible things possible if we are working really hard and having the right team at hand.
Mm. But is there any difference that you would point out when it comes to scaling, in particular in the energy sector, as compared to other sectors, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a couple of things which are important to acknowledge. I think if you talk about climate, we wanted to change systems, no operating systems which are in place right now. Thinking about us, we are investing into the energy system, a lot of our efforts. And the energy system, it should work 24/7. And we currently use the energy system which was developed 40, 30, 20 years ago. And that's operated by large companies with thousands of people. They are used to run it, no? Mm-hmm. And I think to implement now new innovations and new technologies, it's really difficult so that people really see, understand, and are willing to do that, because they are used to run a system and keep it secure. And what we in fact wanted to do with the energy system is right now, we wanted to change it completely, and we need to change it completely, because so much renewable energies in the system makes also the need for changing it completely. But I think the main thing is you wanted to change an entire established industry, hundreds or millions of people which are running the system, and they need to change completely. And that's not an easy task. And that makes it complex. Usually, if you start with a complete new product or business, you just start new, fresh from a white sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. But here we wanted to accomplish something which seems to be impossible, changing something why we are using it. Right. And that makes it really important to onboard stakeholders, discuss that probably, and understand all sides to come to a ground where we can implement new innovations.
Mm. Jan, you know, with operational hubs in Berlin, Tel Aviv, and Palo Alto, what's the most striking difference you've noticed in how each ecosystem approaches climate tech innovation?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So, simply speaking, we have three innovation hubs with regard to the climate transition or energy transition. It's mm-hmm. Asia, it's North America, and Europe. And we are used to Europe and North America, and a couple or most of our startups they have clients in Asia, so we also understand that a bit. But really talking about Europe and North America, what we see is, first of all, the challenge to change a system and the change of the system is most advanced in Europe. So we see a lot of cool new innovation startups, people which really wanted to change the world here. And what we also see here more differently is that the people in Europe, we have a lot of passion for solving that task. No, we are used to work in this quite diverse continent, and there's a lot of challenge and problems, and we really wanted to make the change happening. So I would say passion, enthusiasm, topics we need to solve, new innovations. Europe is outstanding. It's an amazing continent, and we have much to offer to the rest of the world. If you look at the North American market, they have different topics in the energy sector. They're also starting to transition that to renewable, new technologies, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. However, they have topics like the aging grid system or other topics where they just need to change the asset base for other reasons. And there's a lot of appetite into climate or energy tech startups. And what's most interesting in the US, that's really a venture capital market. So they are the highest valuations. There's the best understanding of investors, how to scale and how to invest into those companies. And if you look at the US, it's always about what is the opportunity. If you discuss something with an investor there, or we discuss something with our co-investors there. In Europe, we are much more also kind of looking at the downside of life. So what has happens if this happens and that happens? So we are a bit more risk averse, so to say, and that are main differences I see in the market. So we have great people with a lot of passion to want to make it happen, but we look sometimes too much into risk. And in the US, that's a very advanced venture capital market, a lot of capital available. And there you get more for great opportunities. That's the summary. And then talking about Asia, I think it's dominated by China, no? China invests $600 billion per year into the energy transition. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. but it looks like a large project of a large country, isn't it? So we'll see how it works. But China is doing a lot. And if you look what they have achieved with manufacturing, they are creating and manufacture the cheapest solar plants, the cheapest wind farms, the cheapest electrical cars. So we're really making that really, really cheap for us to decarbonize our planet. So that's, I think it's a great gift we get from there as well.
Jan, what's one lesson each of these ecosystems could teach the others about, you know, driving the climate innovation?
Yeah, it's a good question. Maybe it was already in my last answer, but just the one lesson from Europe you can teach is look at the European energy system, and then you can really see how you can change an energy system in time and quickly, because we are the farthest with passion and with enthusiasm. And I think that in China and in North America and America, we could help or contribute to that, solving that problem. The US Americans, they are the people that really know how to scale financing, how to provide capital in a fast manner, and how to make it happen that companies there scale two or three times quicker than in Europe and Asia. And I'm not sure if this is something we should learn, but I think what intrigues me with regard to Asia is the leadership. No, so China is quite is led by one party, by one government, with a strong view on the energy transition. And what you can see in China if everyone is aligned, everyone goes into the same direction. What could happen if you have strong leadership on solving one of the biggest problems we have on Earth? And I think these three items are all three together really important to accomplish the task. Mm.
Yeah, investing in climate tech often, you know, involves long-term bets, right? It doesn't happen overnight. How do you balance the need for patience with the you know, urgency of the climate crisis?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. So I believe the topic is it's scalability and the topic of profitability, and we can manage patience if we invest our time and our focus on topics which can be financially attractive. But because if ultimately things are financially attractive, they start to decarbonize and they start to scale. And if we have something at hand like this, then we are also able to do that in a short time frame. No, and however, venture capital is a long-term investment. So our funds are operating for 10 years. So we invest in 5 years, and then we start to exit our investments in the next 5 years. So it's a really, really long-term horizon, and you need to have the patience. And I think the medicine to get patience is the development of the startups and focusing on really real problems which are scalable and can be solved, and working with the right people.
When it comes to climate tech, is there a blind spot, you know, we're collectively not addressing fast enough?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't say that's an investor blind spot. I think it's a blind spot of all of us. And even as of today, it's even much more complicated than it was 24 months ago. But just focusing on the blind spot, I think the blind spot is everything is there. You just need to use it. And we discussed previously, you and me, we exchanged about the topic, how difficult is it still to charge an electrical vehicle if you wanted to run 600 kilometers with it? No? But generally speaking, and if you live in a city and have an electrical car, it's the best thing you can move with if you wanted to have an personalized driving experience, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of things that are already available we can use every day in order to be more successful with our emissions, our own emissions. And I think we, all of us, we need to just do more, just do a little bit more. We need to buy these products more. We need to focus more. And there's some really easy things you can do, even if you don't have the money. You can decide yourself if you wanted to use public transportation or mm-hmm. the train instead of an airplane for traveling. Or you can choose if you buy products from the area where you live in. Or if you eat more or less meat, and all this kind of small decisions we can do. And mm-hmm. even if you have a couple of money, you can invest some of your money into solar panels, heat pumps, electrical vehicles, whatever mm-hmm. you can think of. And you can do an exciting financial return with that. You have payback times from 3 to 5 years right now in all markets in the world. So I think it's just on us. And my main question to myself, what else can we do to inspire and motivate people more to consume more renewable or sustainable products?
I like it, Ian. You know, startups in your portfolio are scaling to redefine energy and cities. If you could redesign one major city from scratch, what would you prioritize and how would it look like?
Yeah. Three things, and all quite aligns with our fund investment strategy. So first of all, we would set up a renewable energy system in general, no? And it would be solar and wind, and it would be backup, would be batteries. And then we would use lots of software technologies to combine everything so that we can manage that in a one energy system, a holistic way. And that would be one thing. The second thing, if the buildings we build, we would try to set them up and build them with materials which are more sustainable and less polluting. If you think about all the stuff you need in order to set up a building, but then also the buildings would be equipped with rooftop solar, with heat pumps, with software technology to manage energy, heat, and cooling, so that we have a really, really low, or even we don't have an emission footprint in the building. And then if I'm thinking about transportation, that would be definitely something electrical, no? We would have an underground or an overground. In Berlin, we say the S-Bahn. And we would use shared electric vehicles and electrical bikes, or just bikes without any electrical motor or generator. And that would be a little bit my dream city.
Does the city exist already? Like what city? I'm sure you've traveled to many cities around the world. If you were to choose one, what city do you think gets it right so far, or is close to getting it right?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of cities in Europe or which wanted to make it right, and that's also with our European thinking and the joint efforts, especially the EU countries, and making that mm-hmm. happen. And there's, in each country, I see cities which are doing more and more. For that. So I'm from Berlin, so I love Berlin. There's a lot of electric cars available. And we are doing a lot in order to change our buildings. They even came up with the heating law here in Germany. It's still an argument, but I think there's a lot of effort and time, but there is no ideal case. But I see the spirit. And that, I can say also the same for, I've mentioned before, I'm involved also in Spain and Madrid. We have a lot of electric car, more charging stations, new buildings. All the new buildings need to have involved renewable systems when they are set up newly or they are rebuilt. So there's a lot of things happening. And then if you go then more to the newer countries, not newer countries, but the newer cities like Dubai, Abu Dhabi, where with a lot of capital, new cities are erected or built up. So I think there's a lot of this sustainable thinking behind that. So I see things moving. I think I wouldn't say there is the city, but there's a lot of things are happening.
Good. We were talking in the beginning, or like some time ago, that you know, we all need to do more What's the most ambitious collaboration or partnership you've witnessed, and how did it shift the needle?
Yeah, it's that is definitely something to think about. I think that just talking about where I am, I'm part of this venture capital ecosystem and climate technology. Mm-hmm. So when I started in 2016, we had a VC market of $6 billion in size, and we did here and there some investment. Mm-hmm. And in the last 9 years, we have established a market which has now available for investment more than $160 billion of US dollars in exciting new startups. And that was supported by a lot of public investors, but also private investors backing mm-hmm. up this funds and then these companies. And I think that's really, really an outstanding partnership. If you look at the climate technology VC space, we are still kind of acting as partners. So we syndicate with each other rounds. We work together. We do our events, and we really try to make the difference here happening. So mm-hmm. from $6 billion to $160 billion in a couple of years, I think that's an outstanding achievement. And I would love we can achieve with larger capital available and with larger mm-hmm. partnerships even much more. But I think there's a huge proof in this climate technology VC market, because people from North America, from Asia, from Europe, with their own ambition to solve and contribute to solving a problem, we were just together coming up with that. Mm-hmm. And we are today the second largest VC market in the world. So that's something I would say that's a great achievement, and happy to be part of that mm-hmm. and was able to also to influence that a bit.
Sounds good, Jan. Although the energy sector, you know, it's highly regulated and slow moving, what's the secret to getting decision makers on board with disruption that you just mentioned, when it comes to venture capital and startups?
Yeah, I think there's one real or true understanding in the energy industry right now. When we started in 2016, our fund was set up largely by one of the largest utilities in Europe, by RWE, and the main ask of the company at that time was provide access to the new business opportunities arising from the energy transition. Mm-hmm. And I think this is also the point why or how you get leaders from the energy sector excited about early stage or scalable new business opportunities. They really have an intrinsic incentive in improving or changing their business into something different. Mm-hmm. And the large energy companies, they don't have all the knowledge and the resources they had to do it themselves. So if you have a technology which makes commercially a lot of sense, you have a friend in the energy sector, mm-hmm. And then you can start create a good and very reliable partnership. And energy people as such, they're human caretakers. In general, people wanted to provide energy to our lives. So mm-hmm. I think they're also, if you have the relationship, then you have really a relationship for your company life or for your product life. So it's quite nicely. But I think business, you need to talk business. They wanted to do something. They wanted to earn money with that. And if you find this common ground, then there are a lot of things happening.
Yeah, speaking of technology, if you had to bet on one emerging climate technology that could scale globally in the next decade, what would it be?
Yeah, first to mention, and we managed not to mention it for the first couple of minutes of our interview, it's AI, you know, artificial intelligence. Think about the power of artificial intelligence. If you just recognize the problem of the energy transition is, in the past we had 50 power production units, and mm-hmm. that was helping an entire country to have energy. In future, this 50 turns into 5 million power power making units. And that means really you need to organize and manage things differently. Mm-hmm. And first thing is you need to connect it. You need to measure and create all the data. But then we will need AI really to analyze data and form decisions in running and managing our future energy system. So I think AI will have a huge part in managing, organizing, and becoming net zero in the next few decades. That's one thing. On the other hand, I believe if you think about AI, the next topic is then kind of topics like quantum computing. Mm-hmm. So if we would be able to compute much faster, much more intelligent, that could really accelerate AI in helping the energy system. Because in the energy system, you have every minute data, and then you need to react and you need to analyze, react. You need to look at the weather and all this kind of variables. You need to compute very fast to understand what to do now. Mm-hmm. And that could be really something which could really help us to advance very fast. So quantum computing or computing intelligence, so to say, and AI could be an amazing thing to get to the next level. And then there are a couple of deep tech technologies we need, which need to become more commercial. If you talk about hydrogen, if you talk about fusion reactors and all this kind of technologies, which will help us from 2030 onwards to have a really fully renewable energy life on our planet. So that would be quite exciting topics. And then for different markets, there are different things which are more important. If you talk about carbon capture, that will be really, really relevant for the US, for example, and for other markets less so. But just naming a few.
Yeah, speaking about, deep tech technologies that needs to commercialize. Many climate tech startups struggle with scaling their solutions, or it just takes time. What was the single biggest factor that determines whether they make it?
Yeah, it's scalability of the technology and the ability of the technology to reduce costs, production costs of the technology. We especially talk about deep technology. So when we started, for example, just to explain, when we started with solar, the unit economics with solar was 10 or 15 times more expensive than any other energy production source we had. Today it's 10 times cheaper. Mm-hmm. And what we need to have technologies which will get to better economics when we scale them up. And that's quite the most important thing as well, so that we can produce at large scale and then reduce cost quickly and successfully. And that's the biggest fact or important fact.
Jan, if you could send a message, one message to all founders out there building their solutions in climate tech, what would it be?
If you have an amazing idea, whether it is deep tech, or it's just software or digital tools, just reach out to your ecosystem in the very beginning and try to understand how they can help and support you to make it a really, really great product. Mm-hmm. I think the main topic in climate tech is you have so many stakeholders. If you reach out from the ideation phase right away, then you will have a great chance to make that a really big thing.
Jan, we are coming to the end of the year. Is there any project or new initiative, either within Future Energy Ventures or outside of it, that you're very excited about or very much looking forward to, that you would like to share with the audience?
Yeah, so I'm definitely excited with the climate tech development or our sector as such, and there's a lot of opportunity We ourselves, we are currently closing our next LP round. So there are coming new investors into our fund. And I'm really excited mm-hmm. that it means we can invest more capital in new companies. That's great. So founders, please come back, reach out to us if you want to discuss a potential investment. And I'm also excited about, I think, if you read or have read the news in the past few weeks about mm-hmm. what's happening in the world, it does not sound really nice. But I'm really optimistic that we can make it. I think we need to keep focus all together, and I'm excited about the opportunity which is in front of us, and we all together can grab that. And it's in our hand to get to net zero. There's no one else than ourselves who can make that happen. And don't worry about geopolitics. Climate tech is much more important. Because that will really sustain our lives and the lives of our next generation. You've, Marcin, mentioned you have a small kid.
Yeah.
Mine are a little bit older, but we have to leave the planet with the better. It needs to be better to get better and be in shape. So that's the mission I'm excited about.
So we have the same mission, Jan. My mission is also to help build better, happier, more sustainable future that my daughter will be excited about living in. Jan, maybe to end it off, how about you drop a few predictions for the 2025? What would you like to see happen?
Yeah. So my prediction will be, even it does not look like, but we will get more collaborations between the different continents. In the next few years, because we all have the same goal, climate. We need to want to find solutions for our climate mm-hmm. challenge. And this will help us to scale this to the next level. And I predict also that we will grow, especially in the startup sector again, 40 to 50% overall in the different markets, e-mobility, transportation, building sector, and so on and so forth, and we will see further unicorns as well. So I really like that, and I think we will see the first unicorns from an AI climate technology startup, maybe next year or the year after.
Mm. Jan, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the show. I wish you all the best. Merry Christmas. And I hope to see you sound and happy in the new year.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Marcin.